Hello and welcome to the Talking News for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding area. I'm Bill and this is the Red Saturn programme for Saturday, April 26th, 2025. I do hope you're all well. Since offering to play listeners' favourites, I've had a request from Anne Brisbrown Lee, who'd like to hear Strangers on the Shore by Acca Bilk. He had originally written this tune for his young daughter and named it Jenny after her. It became the theme music for a new BBC drama series about a French girl who arrives in Brighton to be an au pair. So the piece took the title of the series, Stranger on the Shore. Stranger on the Shore by Acca Bilk, a number one record in 1962, which sold over 1 million copies. It also reached number one in America, the first British record to do so, which paved the way for what Americans call the British Invasion, spearheaded by the Beatles a couple of years later. If you have a favourite song or piece you'd like to hear on the programme, please send your request in the red pack with the USB drive when you return it, and I'll do my best to track it down and play it. This week, as always, we start off with the news stories from the Hearts Advertiser. This will be followed by the radio listings and the audio described TV listings. 10 Today is up next, our series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you moving at home. Then we have a number of events this week in history, which will be followed by some famous birthdays. Then we'll have a musical interlude with one of Acca Bilk's great friends and rivals on the British trad jazz scene, Kenny Ball, who had a hit with Midnight in Moscow in 1962. Sounds of Nature follows, provided this week by Ian Brady of the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. Following on from this will be a couple of articles from the Hearts Life Archive. First is an account of Buffalo Bill's Wild West show coming to Hitchin in 1904, with hundreds of cowboys, Native Americans and their horses, and with the amazing sharpshooter Annie Oakley, thrilling a crowd of some 24,000 people. In contrast, the second article is about strange goings-on in a few of Hertfordshire's many interesting churches. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Caroline, Liz, Penny and Fiona.
Hello, this is Caroline, and my first story this week is all about the upcoming London Marathon and a runner who prepares for Marathon Challenge, Natalie, running the London Marathon in memory of her father. A woman who hated running is set to take on the London Marathon in memory of her late father. Natalie Hartstone from Radlett is preparing to run in the TCS London Marathon in honour of her father, Jeremy, who passed away from a brain tumour in 2019. The 35-year-old actress, who helps with admin in her family retail business, is using her ballot place to raise funds for brain tumour research. Having never run more than 6 miles before signing up for the April 27th marathon, Natalie is determined to complete the 26.2-mile race. Natalie said, "If you knew me at school, you'd know I hated running. I came last at every sport, but especially running and cross-country. I've had to contend with chronic fatigue and broken bones, which adds to a list of reasons why this seems crazy to myself and those who know me." Jeremy, a business owner, was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumour in 2017 after a sudden change in his speech. Despite aggressive treatment, Jeremy died in March 2019 at the age of 58. Natalie said, "He wanted to throw everything he could at getting better and held on to a belief that he was going to be one of the people who survived the disease. Sadly, that wasn't his fate." Since Jeremy's death, the family has participated in several fundraising events, including Wear a Hat Day and 10K Steps a Day in February. Natalie will be among the 100 runners supporting brain tumour research, whose aim is to find a cure for all types of brain tumours. She said, "I've watched the marathon for years and knew that one day I wanted to be there. If Dad were alive, I know he'd be telling everyone he meets that his daughter is running the London Marathon." Carol Robertson, National Events Manager for Brain Tumour Research, said, "Natalie's enthusiasm and resolve in supporting the cause is abundantly clear. We're grateful for Natalie's support in changing this for future patients and wish her the best of luck on race day later this month." Donations to Natalie's marathon challenge can be made through the London Marathon Enthuse website. And the article is accompanied by some lovely photos of Natalie as a little girl sitting on her father's lap on holiday in Bilbao in May 2018, and some photos of Jeremy having treatment in hospital. There's also a picture of Natalie in her brain tumour research running vest, looking fit and well and ready for the marathon.
Hi, this is Liz. My first recording today is entitled "Man in 90s Pays £40,000 to Suspected Rogue Trader." A builder has been arrested in St Albans on suspicion of rogue trading offences after being paid an excessive £40,000 by a man in his 90s. On Saturday, April the 5th, an elderly man attended his bank in St Albans and tried to transfer £25,000 to another account. Due to the large sum, the bank checked the account and saw that £40,000 had already been transferred to the same account in cheques that same week. The bank invoked the banking protocol and informed the police. Officers attended the man's home and inspected the building works and judged that the amount charged for the work was excessive. The builder, a 28-year-old man from Milton Keynes, was located and arrested on suspicion of fraud. Detective Sergeant Anna Luxon from the Serious Fraud and Cyber Unit said, "We'd ask people to please share this advice with their friends, relatives and neighbours, especially those who may be elderly or vulnerable. If you suspect rogue trading may be taking place or that you may have been a victim, please report it to police straight away." Typically, rogue trading sees an individual or a group of people call at your door unannounced and offer to do work on your home or garden that will be either unnecessary or vastly overpriced, such as repairing tiles on your roof or removing a dangerous tree from your front garden.
Hello, this is Penny. Redbourne tops best places to live list. St Albans and Redbourne have both been named in the top five for places to live across the UK by a property expert. Garrington Property Finders compiled the list, which included all 1,447 towns, cities and villages in England and Wales. Five categories: natural beauty, well-being, heritage and culture, schools and jobs, and value for money, were used to create the ranking, with Redbourne topping the list as the best place to live. Top of this year's ranking is Redbourne, a picture postcard village in Hertfordshire, just 30 miles from central London, which combines rural charm with easy access to the capital, the website reads. Redbourne has two golf courses and tracks its history back to Roman times. And it was the scene of one of the first cricket matches ever played. The village common first echoed to the sound of Leather on Willow in 1666. But for those considering a move in 2025, Redbourne is a top scorer across the board. Its attractive rural location helped it secure 11th place in our Best Place to Live Live Rankings Natural Beauty category. And it also performed well in both the heritage and the schools and jobs categories. St Albans followed closely behind in the number 5 spot. Harpenden also made the top 40, coming in at 39. You can see the full ranking online on garrington.co.uk/bestplacestolive2025.
Hello, this is Fiona, and my first story is entitled Hospice Firewalk Returns. Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care is delighted to announce the return of its popular Firewalk event, which will this year be held at the Peace Hospice, Peace Drive in Watford. Taking place on Thursday, November the 13th from 6:30 p.m, the event will give daredevils the chance to conquer a path of burning embers, all the while raising funds for Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care. Participants will be given expert tuition by the Fundraising Firewalk Association on the evening before taking to the amazing feat with just their bare feet. Erin Beer, head of the inpatient unit at the Peace Hospice, took part in the last firewalk at Peace Hospice. She said, "I decided to take part in the firewalk as it was such an unusual and interesting way to raise money. I definitely wanted to give it a go. And it was such an amazing experience. It was a great way to bond with other colleagues who were doing it, as well as meeting supporters who were taking part, many of whom had a loved one who had been cared for at the inpatient unit. The actual walk itself gave me such an adrenaline rush. I found that I wasn't even thinking about what I was doing, really. I just thought about why I was doing it, and that got me across those coals. Friends and family are invited to come along and will be entertained by a fryer breather, a stilt walker and music, as well as watching their loved ones tackle the blazing challenge." Emma Stewart, events manager at Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care, said, "The firewalk has been well supported in previous years, so we're delighted to be bringing it back. Whether you've taken part before or are looking for a new challenge, signing up is a must for any thrill seeker. The firewalk is open to everybody over the age of 12, though obviously under 16s must be accompanied by an adult. And the story is accompanied by a wonderful picture from last year where a lot of professionals in their uniforms are queuing up to wait their turn. You've got a lovely picture centrally of the coals themselves and a health worker reaching the end of her firewalk and doing it with much panache."
Visitors see thousands of tulips in bloom. County's newest floral attraction proves immensely popular. Organisers are celebrating a busy opening weekend for St Albans' newest visitor attraction. Tully's Tulip Fields opened on Friday, April the 11th, with visitors flocking to the site just off the M25 at London Colney. The Hertfordshire Floral Attraction is situated on land next to Willow's Activity Farm and has more than 100 different varieties of tulip for visitors to see. In total, more than 500,000 tulip bulbs have been planted. Stuart Baer is the owner of Tully's Farm, who operate Tully's Tulip Fest, the UK's number one tulip festival, which has brought Tully's tulip fields to the Hertfordshire countryside. Stuart said, "The tulip fields have proved immensely popular all weekend, and we are thrilled to have been able to bring this spectacular floral experience to St Albans for the first time. Visitors will be treated to a unique, ever-changing landscape as tulips bloom in waves throughout the season. From the earliest varieties to the late bloomers, the fields will shift in colour, shape and beauty throughout the event." Stuart added, "The tulip fields are extremely dynamic as the rows of mixed varieties ensure that the fields look fabulous from start to finish, meaning that every visit offers something new to see. As well as the colourful tulips in bloom, there's plenty of photo opportunities around the site to capture that perfect picture for Instagram. Food lovers can also try poffages, delicious Dutch mini pancakes, while the Tulip Coffee House also serves hot and cold drinks. Musicians are also roaming the site, entertaining visitors with live acoustic tunes. Bringing the taste of Holland to hearts, Tully's Tulip Fields will open daily until Monday, May the 5th, but further dates may be added as the flowers come into bloom. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.tulipfields.co.uk or like and follow at Tully's Tulip Fields on Instagram for all the latest news and updates. And the photos accompanying this are really quite stunning, as rows and rows of pink and yellow and white and red tulips glow in the sunshine.
The examination hearings for a local plan for St Albans District are set to begin. This will provide an opportunity for objectors to raise any concerns. Two planning inspectors, Matthew Birkinshaw and Thomas Bristow, will assess whether the local plan from St Albans City and District Council is sound and complies with all legal requirements. The hearings, which will take place in public at the Council Chamber in the Civic Centre, St Peter's Street, St Albans, will run from Tuesday, April the 29th to Friday, May the 2nd. Anyone interested in following the proceedings can do so online, as the Council will provide a live webcast of the event. Only those invited by the inspectors will be allowed to speak at the hearings. They are entitled to be represented by a legal advocate with expertise in planning law. The main purpose of the hearings is to allow the inspectors to probe arguments put forward by objectors about the local plan's soundness or legal compliance. On the opening day, they will consider the plan's legal compliance, while on Wednesday, they will deal with housing growth and strategy. Thursday is due to be taken up by the principle of green belt issues, though not specific sites, while the final day will be reserved for any other business. Amanda Foley, the council's chief executive, said, "Producing a local plan is one of the most challenging and complex tasks that a planning authority is required to undertake. The local plan that we submitted for examination in November last year is the culmination of more than 3 years' work, including extensive public consultations. We are pleased that the examination process will shortly get underway, with the first stage allowing for the inspectors to look in depth at objections. The local plan is a blueprint for the sustainable growth of St Albans District over the next 16 years. It identifies land suitable for future housing and commercial development, as well as the necessary infrastructure. The proposed plan allows for the building of 15,000 new homes in the district up to 2041 at designated sites."
MP slams post office plans. "It's at the heart of our main high street," says Daisy Cooper. St Albans MP Daisy Cooper has slammed the post office after plans were revealed to franchise the High Street branch by the autumn. The post office said it would be handing over its remaining directly owned branches to franchises. 108 branches are set to be offloaded, including the popular St Peter Street branch in St Albans. The process could see the sites taken over by other businesses, while others could face closure as franchises are moved to different premises. MP Daisy Cooper has since published a statement of intent in response to the post office slamming its decision and promising further action. The MP said, "The St. Peter Street branch is at the heart of our main high street, and this new announcement does not come with the necessary guarantees that it'll stay there for the long term. There are no guarantees on the range or quality of services, no guarantees that the St. Peter Street post office will remain in the same accessible building or location, no guarantees that there won't be a break in service, and no guarantees that if the franchises don't work out, that we won't lose city centre services altogether. From start to finish, post office bosses have put the cart before the horse. They failed to consult on which post office and government services our local community needs before planning ahead with the change in model. Even now, they've announced they're moving to the franchise model without setting out how they intend to consult with our community on the impact it could have." The St. Albans MP said she would be pressing post office bosses to share details on the promised consultation as soon as possible. "We want to make sure all voices are heard before a final decision is made this autumn," she said. "It's understood the post office expects the majority of these branches to continue running at their current sites, but that some of these could face closure as franchises are moved to different premises affecting staff." The company stressed that communities affected will continue to be able to access post office services, either at or near to the same location. "The move is part of efforts by the post office to generate cash to help it increase pay for postmasters." Post office chairman Nigel Railton added, "Moving to a fully franchised network is one part of enabling the post office to deliver a new deal for postmasters, helping to create a long-term, sustainable future for the post office. By franchising these branches, we are protecting access to our services for communities right across the UK and realising £40 million worth of savings that will enable us to uplift postmasters' remunerations by up to 10%.
And now an article written by Victoria Collins MP entitled, "We Need Access to Medical Care." Something absolutely fundamental to our everyday lives is knowing that through our fantastic NHS, we can access medical care whenever we need it. But in an increasing number of instances, this can't be said. This reality was shockingly revealed through recent Lib Dems findings that on 136,000 occasions in the Harts Valleys area, which covers St Albans, Harpenden, Decorum, Watford, in 2024, people waited for over 28 days for a GP appointment after booking it. That is 14% more instances than in 2023, during which local residents faced an unacceptably lengthy wait for treatment. It's therefore deeply worrying that, in this climate where GPs are immensely overstretched, the government has opted to pile on costs through increasing employers' national insurance contributions. It's no secret that we Liberal Democrats have opposed this jobs tax every step of the way. I've even asked the Prime Minister about this, highlighting the Elms medical practice in Harpenden. But despite our best efforts, the government has been entirely unwilling to rethink their nonsensical policy. Even when Liberal Democrat Lords monumentally passed an amendment to the government's bill to exempt health and care providers from this tax hike, it was blocked by the government when it was voted on again in the Commons. This not only illustrates a lack of urgency to fix the crisis facing our local healthcare services, but the government's willingness to add costs and pressures. The crisis point in the NHS has reached may have resulted from years of Conservative neglect, but it's up to this Labour government to fix it, rather than sidelining it with review after review and failure to act. That's why we Liberal Democrats are not only fighting for this jobs tax concession, but for guarantees that Harpenden and Berkhamsted residents will be able to access medical care when it's needed. We are calling for a legal right to a GP appointment within 7 days or 24 hours if urgent. And locally, I'm working with the ICB, Harpenden Patient Care Network and local councils to address concerns about healthcare access with new housing developments and to drive PCN plans to improve this. Failing to act now will just worsen access to medical treatment and add pressure to hospitals and A&E departments when people turn to them in the absence of GP appointments. The government must urgently support local providers who are key players in securing everyday access to medical care.
Plans for BT Street Hub Unit. Plans have been submitted to breathe a new lease of life into traditional phone boxes with the introduction of a BT Street Hub unit to St Albans. The BT Street Hub unit allows passers-by to connect to Wi-Fi, charge their devices, make calls and find out relevant information about the area alongside access to navigation tools. The new BT Street Hub unit has been signposted for the Ridgeway, Marshallswick. Martin Brown, head of town planning at Tellent, said in a cover letter on behalf of the BT Group, "Street hubs will future-proof the high street, making them smarter, safer and more sustainable." The HD displays on either side of the unit will be used for advertising, providing the council with 876 hours of free advertising as well as acting as a community notice board for events and information for residents. Included within the application was a response from Hertfordshire County Council, which recommends that the level of luminance from the screens needs to be reduced to acceptable levels. It was also stated that the advertisement must be in the form of images, not videos, to ensure that drivers passing by on the road adjacent are not distracted by the reels of adverts. To view the planning application, visit planningapplications.stalbans.gov.uk/planning.
Council responds to social housing wait times. St Albans City and District Council has said it is pleased but not complacent as new figures about social housing wait times surface. New statistics revealed that families in St Albans face an almost 2-year wait for 3-bedroom social homes. Data published by the National Housing Federation, Crisis and Shelter, has shown that it will take St Albans Council 1.9 years to clear its current waiting list for 3-bedroom homes. Chris Trail, Strategic Director for Community and Place Delivery, said the team was pleased to compare favourably with other local authorities. However, we are not complacent and know that there is a significant demand for social housing in the district, she added. One of our priorities as a council is to provide more social housing and we continue to look for opportunities to do so. St Albans was 272nd in the country, while Stevenage, 17.3 years, and Broxbourne, 23 years, ranked the highest in Herts. Decorum was slightly higher than St Albans at 3.4 years. The council highlighted the recent construction of 12 properties, including 6 3-bedroom homes in Batwood. In June, the King Offer development is due to be completed, providing 14 new social rent homes, including 11 3-bed and 2 4-bed properties. In addition, we are currently reviewing little-used garage sites to see if any are suitable for redevelopment.
Happy Nursery earns good Ofsted report. A St Albans nursery has been labelled happy and settled following a good Ofsted inspection. Canopy Nursery in Brickett Wood had its first inspection in January after launching in 2023. The school was rated good in all areas, including quality of education and behaviour and attitudes. Co-owners Kerishma and Mihir Damicha were thrilled to receive a positive report. Mihir said, "We are delighted that Ofsted has rated Canopy St Albans as good across the board. Our background is in teaching, and we have always had a passion for children with dreams to own our own nursery. So, for our hard work to be recognised by Ofsted in this way is a wonderful achievement." Karishma extended her gratitude to the incredible team and wonderful children for making Canopy a special place to learn and play. "We strive to create an environment where both the children and our team can thrive, and we value everyone who walks through our nursery doors, remaining committed to providing an exceptional childcare provision," Kerishma added. During the one-day inspection, Ofsted assessed staff, teachers, pupils and provisions at the school. The report read, "Children are happy and settled in the nursery. The staff team greet them with enthusiasm and show a genuine interest in the children. There is a strong emphasis on getting to know the children and families well. Children were thought to demonstrate curiosity and engagement as they explore the learning environment. Children behave well. They show kindness to their friends, use their manners, and are beginning to share," the report added. Staff were praised as good role models, using positive language to remind children of good behaviour. Inspectors said, "Staff support children to be independent. They encourage children to wash their hands and eat with cutlery during mealtimes. Staff also provide children with valuable opportunities to develop their communication and language skills. Canopy ensures good SEND provision by collaborating with other professionals, creating a tailored approach to children's learning and development, which is deemed effective."
Protect our UK steel industry. St Albans MP Daisy Cooper, on the recall of Parliament to pass emergency laws in a bid to save the UK's steel industry and the need for a long-term plan. Something unusual happened in British politics the other week. Parliament was recalled on a Saturday. That sort of thing doesn't happen often. In fact, the last time MPs were summoned back to Westminster on a weekend was during the Falklands War in 1982. This time, the emergency was closer to home, saving our steel industry. Talks between the government and Jingye, the Chinese owners of British Steel, had collapsed, and with the Scunthorpe plant, the last place in the UK with working blast furnaces, hanging by a thread, the government needed to act fast. Scunthorpe isn't just another industrial site. It represents the heart of Britain's steelmaking tradition and a vital part of our national infrastructure. Without it, we lose our ability to produce steel for everything from our defence forces to wind turbines. But what fewer people realised was just how extraordinary the emergency laws rushed through Parliament really were. They gave sweeping powers to the Secretary of State, the right to enter premises, seize assets, and make decisions without court oversight. Refusing to comply could land someone in legal trouble, and those using these powers are immune from prosecution. After I pressed him to repeal these unprecedented powers as soon as possible, the business secretary promised that they would be temporary. Even still, many were left asking, how on earth did it come to this, where the only way to protect any sovereign steel capacity was for the Secretary of State to give himself these huge and unconstrained powers? The answer? Years of poor decisions. A Brexit deal that put up trade barriers, a failure to get spiralling energy prices under control, and the decision to sell British Steel to a Chinese company with questionable long-term commitment. now, with global pressures like Putin's war in Ukraine and economic uncertainty driven by tariffs and conflict, it's more vital than ever to keep our steel production secure and in British hands. We need a long-term plan. That means keeping all options on the table, including public ownership. UK-made steel should be treated as a strategic national asset. And we must bring down the cost of electricity for industries like steel that power our economy. This is about more than jobs in Scunthorpe. It's about securing our future. Our national security, energy independence and economic resilience depend on it.
Anti-apartheid campaigner gives an inspiring talk. An anti-apartheid campaigner and former South African MP gave a talk in St Albans. Andrew Feinstein, who served under Nelson Mandela in the 1990s, spoke to a packed room at the Jubilee Centre. He was invited by St Albans Friends of Palestine to talk to the 120 attendees about his career, which began as a teenage activist against apartheid in the 1980s. He has recently become a campaigner on the arms trade and a leading voice in the international movement for Palestinian rights. The title of Mr. Feinstein's talk was South Africa and Israel, Apartheid Then and Now. He condemned crackdowns on the movement for Palestinian rights and praised the Hearts Palestine Support Coalition, HPSC, which gathered signatures from audience members for its petition calling for Hertfordshire County Council to end its £95 million investments in companies linked to human rights violations against Palestinians. Peter Siegel, a member of the St Albans Friends of Palestine committee, said it was truly inspiring to hear from such a seasoned campaigner. In the current situation, it's all too easy to feel dispirited. But Andrew reminded us that there are always meaningful things that all of us can do to work towards a better future.
OVO opens auditions for Lord of the Flies. The production is part of the Roman Theatre Open Air Festival. Aspiring young actors are being encouraged to audition for a production of Lord of the Flies in St Albans. Theatre production company OVO has invited people between the ages of 11 and 21 from St Albans and surrounding areas to audition for its 2025 Youth Ensemble. The Youth Ensemble offers budding actors the chance to take part in a professional show. This year's production will be a stage version of Lord of the Flies, William Golding's classic tale of survival and human nature. The production will be staged at the Roman Theatre Open Air Festival and will be directed by OVO associate artist Faith Turner, who has been with the company for more than 10 years. She's performed with OVO for over a decade, with recent roles including Jem in The Highwayman, Jenny in Mosquitoes, the Professor in Little Women, and the title role in Hedda Gabler. An experienced drama teacher and practitioner, Faith Turner has been working with young people for the past 14 years, including as Deputy Director of Drama at St Paul's Girls' School in London. Adam Nichols, Artistic Director of OVO, said, "We want to develop the next generation of theatre makers and build on our productions of A Midsummer Night's Dream, 2017, The Railway Children, 2023, and The Secret Garden, 2024, in which we were able to cast children and young people from across the district. I'm really excited about this year's production and look forward to unearthing and showcasing some amazing local talent this summer." The show will be performed from August 28th to August 31st, following 2 weeks of intensive rehearsal. Open auditions will be taking place on Sunday, May the 11th, and Saturday, May the 17th, at the Maltings Theatre, St Albans. These will be in an informal workshop format and are open to all, regardless of previous experience. Young people interested in auditioning should ensure they're available for all rehearsal and performance dates. To register interest and find out more, go to their website, which is www.ovo.org.uk/OVO Youth Ensemble. The chosen cast members will have to attend rehearsals from August the 11th to August 27th before the performances on August 28th to August 31.
Dinosaur fun coming to Willows. Dinosaur fans can come face to face with a Tyrannosaurus Rex, a Velociraptor and some prehistoric hatchlings this Maybank holiday weekend at Willows Activity Farm. Dino Ventures, a 3-day celebration of ancient reptiles, kicks off on Saturday, May the 3rd, when visitors can look forward to a packed prehistoric programme of activities. Future paleontologists can unearth some ancient fossils in the farm's Big Dig sandpit, with every child receiving a certificate along with their fossil to take home. All this while intrepid explorers can track down dinosaurs in a fun hunt every day of the long weekend. Lisa Elster, Chief Executive at the Willows Activity Farm, said, "We've crammed 165 million years into just 3 days with back-to-back Jurassic japes and Cretaceous capers throughout the bank holiday weekend." And the article is accompanied by a wonderful photo of a smiling Tyrannosaurus Rex ready to welcome you any time over that May bank holiday weekend.
Bowling Club becomes Vibe Hub. Harpenden District Indoor Bowls Club, HDIBC, has become the Vibe Hub for Hertfordshire following a special training event. On April the 9th, HDIBC welcomed bowls clubs, visually impaired people and stakeholders for a day with Visually Impaired Bowls England, Vibe. The training, funded by Heart Sport and Physical Activity Partnership, HSP, aimed to improve access to bowls for people with visual impairments. David Stott, National Development Officer at Vibe, led the coaching. Sarah Marshall, double world champion, and Scott Valance, acting Honourable President at Vibe, shared their experiences to encourage participation. 10 clubs from Hertfordshire attended, focusing on making bowls more inclusive. Ros Cramp, Director at Hearts Disability Sport Foundation, said, "Days like this don't happen very often, but what a brilliant day. I learned so much from David, Bietta, the coaches and participants. It was like a family all trying to work out how to help each other as best they could, and I think we succeeded." HDIBC's director, Chris Ellens, reflected, "It has been just the most magnificent day. Utterly inspiring from all involved, and now the work begins." And this is accompanied by a photo of all the people standing on the bowling green, smiling away, looking like they really have had a fantastic day.
Morning with the Peregrines. And morning is spelt M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. This piece is written by Rabbi Adam Zagara Moffat of St Albans Mazorti Synagogue, and he's writing about the devastation of the first clutch of eggs laid by St Albans Cathedral's peregrines. "Like so many, I was devastated to see that the first clutch of eggs laid by St Albans Cathedral's resident peregrines, Alban and Boudica, this season had been destroyed. The Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust say it's unlikely that the peregrine falcons will produce a further clutch of eggs this season, but I really do hope that we get to see another attempt from these bold, beautiful birds that adorn our city and its skyline. There is no doubt that the destruction of these eggs immediately strikes us as an ethical issue. especially for those who tuned into the live stream from the cathedral when the nest was sadly trodden on. No one need explain to us the problem with needlessly destroying life, even if we are not bird lovers. It is so apparently a religious and ethical issue, and interestingly, the Torah actually has a lot to say about destroying birds' nests in particular. Found in Deuteronomy 22:6-7, the commandment known as Shiluah HaKen, sending from the nest, instructs us that if we wish to take eggs from a nest for food, we have to do so in an ethical way, being mindful of the feelings of the mother bird. This law has often baffled Jewish thinkers who struggle to justify why God would worry so much about birds' eggs. Maimonides, a medieval commentator, explains that we are required to be mindful about how we take eggs precisely because it encourages compassion in us. In his Guide for the Perplexed, 3:48, he writes, "If the Torah takes pity on the suffering of animals and birds, all the more so on human beings. If we are to use animals and their eggs for food, we cannot become inured to the suffering of the action of this. Compassion must really be cultivated. The violence done to Alban and Boudicca's nest should upset us, regardless of the intent. Religion has something to offer in helping us to understand how we should behave towards the non-human animals with whom we share the earth. The compassion cultivated in us when we mourn with St. Alban's peregrines is itself a religious duty. It does help us be better and kinder towards all of our many creatures."
And now an article for Sauvignon Blanc fans. This is written by Julia Jenkins of Flagship Wines in St. Albans, who recommends different wine varieties you might enjoy if you like drinking Sauvignon Blanc. If you like Sauvignon Blanc, you might like these. The grape variety Sauvignon Blanc is synonymous with crisp, zesty, fruity wines, especially from New Zealand, but it seems there's a wave of wine drinkers looking for the next best thing that is similar but different to these wines. I'm a Sauvignon Blanc fan, but not of all styles made from this grape variety. At the moment, my favourite is a subtle Loire Valley French style, and the essential taste that must be present for me with Sauvignon is crisp freshness, balanced with light, flinty fruit on the nose and palate and some lingering fruit notes. Historically, there have been two main styles in the Northern Hemisphere. Firstly, the aromatic, zesty, light, fresh style with minerally, flinty, cut grass notes as found in the Loire Valley, and a lighter version in Hungary and elsewhere in Eastern Europe. Secondly, the full, rich Bordeaux blends with muscadelle and semillon, which is often oak-aged. Now, the southern French Sauvignons have a classy, zesty note balanced with ripe fruit, mouth-filling, yet refreshing texture, and those from Bordeaux are eschewing the oak to create this style, which is much in demand. In the past, New World Sauvignon, especially from New Zealand, is often pungently aromatic, with concentrated aromas and flavours that are reminiscent of gooseberries, elderflower, and tropical fruits. Alternatively, there are more leafy yet concentrated aromatic Chilean and South African Sauvignons. The wines made by this grape in the two main producing regions has evolved with much sharing of ideas between the growers and producers, which blur some of the previously held definitions of each region's wines. This can be seen in some of the much more fruit-driven wines in the Loire Valley, with more concentrated flavours, and more subtle elegance in Kiwi Sauvignons, a great reason to explore Sauvignon from all around the world. But if you really are looking for a new wine experiences and don't want to stray too far from the Sauvignon style, check out wines made from other grapes, such as traditional alternatives including South African Chenin Blanc and French Vicuña. Lesser known but equally good grape varieties with their own Sauvignon similarities are Albarino and Godello Galicia, Italian Fiano, also grown successfully in Australia, Italian Pecorino or Austrian Gruner Veltliner. The demand for Albarino from Galicia is outstripping production and inevitably is putting the price up. However, all is not lost, as Esk Valley Wines in New Zealand makes one which is aromatic, peachy, crisp yet rounded and full on the palate.
Champions. Harpenden Town claim title without kicking a ball. Harpenden Town are champions of the Eastern Region Women's Football League Division 1 North, and they did it without kicking a ball. Harps were due to play Whittlesea Athletic in their penultimate game, needing just 3 points from either of the two games to claim the title and earn promotion. But the decision of Whittlesea to withdraw from the league with 3 games to go meant the ERWFL decision was to hand the win to each of their opponents, including Harps. That put them clear of Histon and with no chance of the Cambridgeshire side catching them, sparking joy at Rothamsted Park. There was another emotion, however, that was flowing through manager Jordan Williams' body. "Relief, really," he said, speaking to club media. "We just needed to get over the line. It's been incredible, though. The journey we have been on at this club for the last 2 years has been incredible. I can only credit the players and the coaches behind the scenes. They've done all the work." Skipper Rebecca Dowdall added, "We're buzzing. We got so close last season, and to get over the line, we're all buzzing. The decision means the planning for next season in the Premier Division can officially begin, even though it already had. And the boss is not counting out more joy." William said, "Everything I try to do is to do the best of my ability, and fortunately in my life I've been able to get to a point that everything I do I've made a success of things. Next season I hope we can go again and make a success of it. Ultimately it's about how far the players and staff want to go, but I believe we can achieve anything." Head of women's football, Michelle Chandler, said the next step is to keep going. She said, "This year, they have been such a fantastic group and worked so hard. They really wanted it, and the feeling of success is great. The coaches work tirelessly. Nobody can appreciate how much work they have put into it. It has been second to none. There are some big teams we will be playing against and some more derbies. It'll be a challenge, but we've already met some of those Premier teams in cups and done really well. Only losing by the odd goal. I can see a really bright future."
And finally, here's an announcement of two concerts that may be of interest. The first is on Sunday, May the 4th at 7:30 p.m. in St. Saviour's Church, which is 25 Sandpit Lane, St. Albans. And it's a folk concert with Belinda Kempstone, Fran Foote. And they are a mother and daughter duo who have sung together privately for years, but in recent years they have sung in public as a duo, bringing timeless renditions without frills or fuss to a repertoire that is rich and varied. And the support singer is myself. And I sing, as some of you may know, quite a range of different kinds of music, from Bob Dylan, Paul Simon, John Renbourn, and even the Incredible String Band. And I will be playing solo. So if you'd like to come to that, it would be great to see you. And the other concert is on the 17th of May, also at St. Saviour's Church at 7:30. It's a classical concert with the Amadeus Chamber Orchestra playing Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony and also playing Rodrigo's Guitar Concerto for solo guitar and orchestra with Royal College of Music scholar Nathaniel Rosales Mercles as the guitar soloist. Lennox Berkeley's Divertimento in B-flat, which has particular interest as the composer was a former pupil of St. George's School, Harpenden, and that will open the concert. So there you are, two concerts, and they're both at St. Saviour's Church, one on the 4th of May, the folk concert, and the classical concert on the 17th of May.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, April 26th. Opera is Debussy's Pelléas et Mélisande, Radio 3, 6 p.m. From Archive on 4, Against the Current, The Great Gatsby at 100, looks at F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel 100 years on from its publication. Shows how, for the attention it's commanded, it remains misunderstood and even underestimated. Radio 4, 8 p.m. My Poetry and Other Animals, Simon Armitage encounters 10 different animals in search of inspiration for a new poem. Radio 4, 9 p.m. And for Night Owls on Saturday, the heat is on in Saigon. The 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, with a look at its history and legacy through the era's music and through the prism of the musical Miss Saigon. Radio 2 at midnight. Sunday, April 27th, in the series The Reunion, Kirsty Walk recalls the shocking incident from 2005 in the aftermath of the 7/7 London bombings, when an innocent Brazilian man was shot dead by police at a London Underground station. Radio 4, 10 a.m. Drama on 4 is Local Hero, an adaptation of the 1983 film. Texan Energy Company executive Mac McIntyre is dispatched to the tiny Scottish fishing village of Furness with orders to buy out the town and develop the area for an oil refinery. But the village works its magic on Mac as he comes to realise not everything of value is for sale. Radio 4 for Local Hero at 3 p.m. Witness History looks back at the disastrous D-Day rehearsal in April 1944 on Radio 4 at 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. A Mum in a Box, Saba, whose mother died when they were born. On their 30th birthday, they were sent a box containing lots of information about the mother they never knew. Radio 4, Sunday night, 7:15. On to programmes then, and now broadcast at the same time every day, Monday to Friday. Same time, same radio station, all week. Murder Must Advertise, 1933 Lord Peter Wimsey Mystery by Dorothy L. Sayers. Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m, or 5 p.m. all week. The 10-part series Conflict and Cooperation, A History of Trade, continues all week on Radio 4, Monday to Friday at 11:45 in the morning. Americast, 100 Days of Donald Trump, examines the significant events to have taken place in the immediate wake of the 2024 election of Trump as US president, in which his rapid-fire policymaking has caused turbulence both home and abroad. Radio 4 all week at 1:45. Composer of the Week, Elizabeth Jacquet de la Guerre, 1665 to 1729, Radio 3 at 4 o'clock. Also all week, The Little Secrets of Great Works. Five cultural voices choose a work of art and talk about them, small and perhaps underappreciated aspect, which carries great meaning for them. Radio 3 all week, 9:45 p.m. Book of Bedtime is The Artist by Lucy Steeds. An aspiring journalist spends a summer of passion at the remote home of the great artist, Edouard Tartuffe. It's in 10 parts and it's beginning every day this week on Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. On to the individual programmes then, starting with Monday, April 28th. Indispensable Relations, a new series which examines the history of the special relationship between the US and Israel. The first of three parts on Radio 4 on Monday at 11 a.m. The panel game The Unbelievable Truth, chaired by David Mitchell, continues on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. And Gift from the North, a radio play from 1997, set in the spring of 1896. A Lancashire fisherman catches a sturgeon, but by law it's the property of Queen Victoria. How can he get the huge fish to the ageing and indifferent monarch? Gift from the North, Radio 4 Extra, 9 p.m. on Monday. Tuesday, April 29th, Swimming Through Chocolate. Gladys Jones and Adrian Cadbury reflect on their lives spent at the Bourneville factory in Birmingham. Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 on Tuesday morning or 4:30 in the afternoon. Helena Bonham Carter shares the story of Agent Zoe, a resistance fighter who parachuted into Nazi-occupied Poland on a mission to save the lives of thousands of women. History's Secret Heroes is on Radio 4 on Tuesday afternoon at 3. While a drama loosely based on real events and involving British spy Donald MacLean sees in 1945 in February Churchill, Stalin and Roosevelt meeting in Yalta to decide the future shape of Europe. The Road to Yalta is on Radio 4 Extra at 3pm or 9pm on Tuesday. A new series of Heart and Soul looks at the Kingdom of Bhutan, where in 2022, 144 women were ordained in an unprecedented ceremony. Among them, Emma Slade from Kent, the only Western woman to take part. What does it take to break the glass ceiling of Buddhism and be fully ordained as a female monk? Radio 4, 3:30pm. And Peter White presents his regular programme In Touch with news and features for the blind and partially sighted on Radio 4 at 8:40pm. Wednesday, April 30th, in The Reluctant Hero, we meet Larry O'Brien, a lorry driver who survived the 1987 Zeebrugge disaster and helped more than 30 people to safety from the ferry. Radio 4, 9am. Liberation and Fall is a dramatised account of the experiences of the author's father, a former Chinese-Cambodian soldier with the Vietnamese Liberation Army during the Vietnam War. Liberation and Fall, Radio 4, at 2:15 on Wednesday afternoon. Choral Evensong, recorded at St Paul's Knightsbridge in London, Radio 3, at 3. And Our Late Supper is a drama in which a shy middle-aged woman finds herself developing an unexpected friendship with a 12-year-old girl. Radio 4 Extra, 3pm on Wednesday. Thursday, May 1st. And the guest in This Cultural Life is Sheku Kanu Mason, leading light in the prodigiously musically talented Kanu Mason family. Radio 4, 11am. Open Country visits one of the last remaining windmills on the Fylde Peninsula at Little Marton in Blackpool, built in 1838. Radio 4 at just after 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. And Veronica is a dramatisation of H.G. Wells' 1909 novel about a woman who rebels against the restrictions placed on her by her family and society. Narrated by Bill Nighy as H.G. Wells. Radio 4 Extra, 3pm on Thursday or 9 o'clock in the evening. And BBC Inside Science is also on Thursday on Radio 4 at 4:30pm. Friday, May 2nd, Who Was Rosalind? Sets out to identify male performers given female roles in Shakespeare's plays. Radio 4 Extra, 10:30 in the morning or 4:30 in the afternoon. Relatively brings us a second series of the comedy about four generations of a family, starring Alison Steadman. Radio 4 Extra, at 8 in the morning, 1pm lunchtime or 7pm. Gardener's Question Time is on Radio 4 at 3 in the afternoon. It's Friday night, It Must Be Music Night, recorded in July last year at Fairfield Halls in Croydon. Radio 3, 7:30pm. And the Political Forum, Any Questions? This week comes from Epstone Village Hall in Nottinghamshire. Radio 4 at 8 o'clock on Friday night. That's it. Thank you to Wendy for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
Hello, this is Diane from Wharfdale Talking News with Val's selection of audio-described TV programmes starting Saturday 26th of April to Friday 2nd of May 2025. Starting with Saturday 26th of April, there are four episodes of the comedy Frasier on Channel 4 starting at 9:05, followed by four episodes of The Simpsons at 11am. This morning's dishes include a roast fillet of beef with fresh horseradish in Mary Berry, Love to Cook, on BBC One at 11:30. Or, on BBC Two at 1pm, Nadia bakes brownies and a chocolate flan. Live coverage of the Women's Six Nations, England versus France, is on BBC Two, kick-off 4:45pm, and live coverage of the FA Cup semi-final between Crystal Palace and Aston Villa is on BBC One, kick-off 5:15pm. Although not audio-described, the commentary should give you an idea of the action in these two matches. A forest ranger suffers an odd death after mysterious lights are witnessed in the sky over a hotspot for sightings of strange flying craft in the first of two episodes of Midsummer Murders at 5pm and 7pm on ITV3. The remaining applicants hope to prove they possess the skills needed to look after the farm's buildings in Our Dream Farm with Matt Baker on Channel 4 at 6pm. Far in the future, the Doctor and Belinda face absolute terror on a brutal planet. Doctor Who is on BBC One at 7:20pm. David Baddiel and Hugh Dennis discuss their upbringings and family histories while tackling the final part of the route along the Garonne Canal in Two Men on a Bike at 8pm on Channel 4. It's 1928 and Downton has been selected as the location for a new silent movie. The film Downton Abbey, A New Era is on ITV3 at 9pm. Surgery brings fresh dangers for Rita, Indy takes risks and Flynn tries to win over the team. The hospital drama Casualty is on BBC One at 9:25pm. On to Sunday, 27th of April. Live coverage of the 45th London Marathon starts at 8:30 this morning on BBC One, and the commentary should give you an idea of some of the highlights of the race. Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, featuring interviews with politicians and key public figures, has moved to BBC Two this week at 9am. The afternoon film on ITV One at 1:30pm is the comedy Uncle Buck. A fun-loving bachelor has to look after his nephew and nieces. In the nature documentary The Americas on BBC One at 6:15, the series continues with a look at a region where the Pacific Ocean shapes life in unexpected ways. Grace and his team are pushed to the limit when the high-stakes trial of a ruthless Brighton drug lord, known as the Merchant, coincides with an intense investigation into a double murder. The final episode of Series 5 of the drama Grace is on ITV1 at 8pm. Michael and Jamie agree to a fight to decide who leads the gang in the Sunday night drama This City Is Ours on BBC One at 9pm. In this documentary, the filmmaker investigates the growing community of religious nationalist Israelis who have settled in the occupied West Bank. Louis Theroux, The Settlers, is on BBC Two at 9pm. The search continues for the nation's most talented amateur pianists, this week taking us to Sheffield. The Piano is on Channel 4 at 9pm. An American backpacker arrives in Thailand where he meets a deranged Scotsman who speaks of a beautiful island. The adventure thriller The Beach is tonight's film on BBC Two at 10pm. Here are the programmes which are on at the same time throughout the week. Animal Park is on BBC One at 10:45am. Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:15am. Bargain Hunt is at 12:15. All these programmes are on BBC One Monday to Friday, and Escape to the Country is at 3pm on BBC One Monday to Thursday. Great British Railway Journeys is on BBC Two at 6:30pm Monday to Friday. Celebrity Catchphrase is at 2pm on ITV One Tuesday to Thursday. On Channel 4, there are four episodes of the US sitcom Frasier starting at 9:10 on Monday and at 6:25am the rest of the week. Heartbeat is on ITV Three at 6pm and 7pm Tuesday to Friday, but starting 5 minutes later on Monday. Now for Monday, 28th of April. Discover how supermarket buyers forecast levels of demand and predict the next major consumer trends in Secrets of the Supermarket Buyers on Channel 4 at 8pm. Trump, the First 100 Days on BBC One at 8:30pm is a documentary examining the beginning of Trump's second presidency. Get those brain cells working as two teams seek a place in the final of Mastermind at 8:30pm on BBC Two. Suspicion is aimed at her colleagues when a TV reporter is found dead in her swimming pool, Another chance to catch this episode of Death in Paradise is on BBC One at 9 p.m. Over on ITV One at 9, The Essex Millionaire Murders is a true crime documentary examining the murder of a wealthy couple on Mersey Island in Essex. Part 2 is at the same time tomorrow. 999 The Critical List on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. visits the Royal Blackburn Hospital during a very busy 48 hours. Cameras follow pilot and engineer Richard Grace as he prepares to stage a major air show at the airfield where he has restored dozens of rare warbirds. Warplane Workshop is on Moor 4 at 9 p.m. Will and his friends leave London for Stratford in the comedy Upstart Crow on BBC Two at 10 p.m. It's on ITV One at 9. In tonight's episode of George Clark's Amazing Spaces on Channel 4 at 9, the architect meets a woman striving to construct an eco cabin from 3 disused supermarket delivery van fridges. It's summer in Swaledale and the renovation of the abandoned farmhouse is about to hit its 1-year anniversary with plenty of work still to do. Our farm next door, Amanda, Clive and kids, is on Moor 4 at 9. Tom Flavin takes on an assault case in which his client is accused of biting off his cousin's ear during an altercation at a party. Barristers Fighting for Justice is on Channel 4 at 10 p.m. Now for Wednesday, 30th of April. A boy tries to find a partner for his grieving father in the romantic comedy Sleepless in Seattle on Film 4 at 6:55 p.m. A portable drum kit, a patchwork hippo, a tiny pair of baby shoes and a damaged 175-year-old painting are brought into the repair shop at 8 p.m. on BBC One. Have you ever wondered who created the modern motorway? Find out as Hannah Fry discovers the secrets behind the 2,300 miles of motorway in the UK. Motorway, the secret genius of modern life, is on BBC Two at 8 p.m. The team set out on their journey to the second checkpoint in Sanya, one of China's most southerly cities. Race Across the World is on BBC One at 9 p.m. David Tennant guides 11 players through a series of mind-bending challenges in a game show where the contestants need to work together to be successful, but only one of them can win. The new 8-part series, Genius Game, is on ITV One at 9 p.m. In Groomed, a National Scandal, on Channel 4 at 9, this documentary charts the experiences of 5 women who have suffered incidents of grooming, rape and abuse. Luxury property developer Guy Phoenix continues his ambitious mission to renovate a £16 million apartment in Monaco, but can the team complete the job before the Monaco Grand Prix? Find out in Building Monaco's Superhomes on Channel 4 at 10:30 p.m. Now for Thursday, 1st of May. The remaining designers create a home from home for rescue dogs at Battersea, which will allow their 4-legged clients to get used to a domestic environment before they are adopted by their new owners. Interior Design Masters with Alan Carr is on BBC One at 8 p.m. A new series of the crime drama set in Italy, Signora Volpe, starring Amelia Fox, starts tonight on the You and Drama channel at 8 p.m. In tonight's episode, Sylvia is looking into the killing of a pillar of the community. To mark the anniversary of VE Day, some of the last surviving veterans, many now more than 100 years old, share their first-hand memories of 8th of May 1945 and the end of the Second World War in Europe. VE Day 80, We Were There, is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. The game show hosted by David Tennant continues. Genius Game is on ITV One at 9 p.m. 5 more stars attempt to complete a series of fiendish challenges in the new series of Taskmaster on Channel 4 at 9. Andy suddenly finds himself with a job interview in tonight's episode of Detectorists at 10 p.m. on BBC Two. And finally, Friday, 2nd of May. The team suspect something sinister is at play when Nurse Lucy vanishes on her way to the hospital. The final episode of the current series of Beyond Paradise is on BBC One at 8 p.m. Experts sift through homes filled with potential treasures to unearth items that could raise large sums of cash. The return of the series Millionaire Hoarders is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. There are two episodes of Father Brown starting at 8 tonight on the You and Drama channel. The suspect list narrows as some vital evidence is found on a computer. The drama Black Snow is on BBC Two at 9. Martin Clunes embarks on an epic journey across the Atlantic to explore the ocean's islands in the new three-part series Martin Clunes Islands of the Atlantic on ITV1 at 9 p.m. An FBI chemist and an ex-British spy are called in when a disaffected war hero threatens San Francisco with chemical weapons. The action thriller The Rock is on ITV4 at 9. Austin organises a bespoke celebrity bus tour in tonight's episode of the sitcom Austin on BBC One at 9:30 p.m. The audio described choices this week seem to be mainly game shows and reality TV shows, but we do hope that you find something that you might enjoy from our selection.
TNF Soundings. Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10t, and the 10t is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter t. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Julian, and here he is.
Hello everyone, welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 8. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either standing up or sitting down, so just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you all to do this exercise safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you are feeling throughout the session. If you feel any discomfort or pain, for example if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. If remaining seated, at least to begin with, it would be ideal if you can use a hard chair so you can sit upright. It could be a dining chair, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises, and have your feet flat on the floor. Okay. If you're stood up, just step your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders and stand up nice and tall and take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor. Keep your back straight, relax your shoulders and take a couple of deep breaths in and out. In and out. So, first up, we have lift and lower. And remember, all the movements can be achieved whether you're sitting or standing. Raise both your arms straight up together with your palms up. Now raise up on your toes, then lower your toes back down, bringing your arms down at the same time. Then bend over gently without straining your back, and with your arms and legs straight if standing, or feet flat on the floor with your knees bent if sitting. Swing your arms from side to side twice, and come back to stand or sit up straight and take a breath. Now we're going to repeat that routine. So raise both arms straight up together with palms up, raise up on your toes, then lower your toes back down, bringing your arms down at the same time. Then lean over gently, keeping legs and arms straight if standing, and feet flat on the floor and knees bent if sitting, and swing both arms from left to right twice and return to standing position. So keep going, lifting up and down, then bending over and swinging. Great work, everyone. This is a nice one just to get all those muscles nice and warm. Next up is straight out. So for this one, if you're standing, you might want to make sure you're near a chair for balance. And whether you're sitting or standing, please do not raise legs higher than hip level. Keeping your left leg soft, bend your right leg and lift your knee level to hip height. Now gently stretch out your right leg as straight as you can without straining. Then bend knee again and return your foot to the start position. Now do the same on the other side, bending your left leg and lifting your knee level to hip height. Now stretch out your left leg as straight as you can without straining, and then bend your knee again and return to the start position. Keep doing this on alternate legs, lifting knee up to hip height, stretching leg out, and returning to the start position. This is a great one for working out those legs. The next one is called crunch for core. Bend your right arm and bring your right elbow towards your left knee, lifting the knee to reach your elbow. You should feel a nice crunch in your core, then release back down. If you're sitting and find it harder to lift the knee, bend your back and lean into it. Or if that's uncomfortable, then you can tap your knee with your hand instead. Now do the same on the other side. So bend your left arm and bring your left elbow towards your right knee, or tap your hand on your knee and release. Whichever variation you're doing, you should feel that crunch in your core. Keep going on alternate sides. Just a few more now. This is great workout for your tummy. We should all be feeling nice and warm now. The next one is called out and over. If you're standing, I recommend you're near something that you can hold onto for balance, like a chair. So raise your right leg out straight in front of you. Then keep your leg straight and move it gently to the right side until you feel that nice stretch in the top of your leg. Then move it back to the centre and back down. Repeat this on the same leg. So raise your right leg out straight in front of you, then keep your leg straight and gently move it to the right side, feeling that nice stretch. Then move your leg back to the centre and back down. So raise straight out, to the side, back straight and back down. And again, do that a couple more times. This is really good for your hips, tummy and thighs. Now we're going to do the same on your left leg. So you raise your left leg out straight and gently move it to the left side until you feel that nice stretch in the top of your leg. Then move it back to the centre and back down, remembering to keep that leg straight. So up, to the side, back straight and back down. A couple more times on this side now. Great work, everyone. Next up is full circle. Stand up nice and tall and keep your back straight. Raise both arms straight up above your head and then sweep them round together to the right, making one big circle all the way back up to the top. And keep going, swinging one big circle to the right. Just a couple more on this direction. Now lower your hands, relax your shoulders and take a breath. Good work. Now we're going to do exactly the same, but in the opposite direction. So keep making those nice big circles. It's a great workout for your shoulders, this one. Now we have push up to moon. So keep your legs nice and soft, and if you're sitting, keep your feet nice and firmly on the ground. Bend your arms so both hands are at chest height, then push both your hands together up in the air on your right, like you're pushing up to the moon. Then sweep your hands back down, front of your tummy, and to the left, pushing both your hands up to the air again on your left. And now keep going, so you're just making a nice big U with your hands, pushing up to the moon on either side. Just a couple more now. Really nice movement, this one. Next up is Slowly Does It. These are slightly different if you're sitting or standing. So if you're standing, keep your back straight, bend at your knees slightly to your halfway point, and hold. And then bend your knees all the way down to your lowest point, and hold. And then straighten up your legs again. Remember to keep your feet facing forward, and try not to let your knees move in front of your toes. So you're just moving halfway, holding, moving down to your lowest point, holding, and then coming back up. Keep going. If you're sitting, just straighten out your right leg right in front of you and hold briefly, feeling that nice stretch down your leg. Then return your foot to the floor and repeat on the other side. Whichever variation you're doing, you're working your legs. If you're standing, you're also working your bottom. Okay, so keep going, always remembering to keep your back straight. So for those standing, bending knees down to your halfway point and hold. Then down to your lowest point and hold, and then up. And sitting, raising your alternate legs and holding briefly. Good job, everyone. Next up is Swing Back. If you're standing, keep your legs straight. If you're sitting, keep your feet flat on the floor. Bend your arms so both hands are at chest height. Then straighten out your right arm and gently swing it back so you feel a nice rotation in your back. Looking towards your right hand, just take it as far as you feel comfortable. Then return to the center and straighten out your left arm and gently swing it back, looking towards your left hand, and repeat. Keep your feet and hips facing forward. You're just moving side to side, swinging your arms back nice and gently, feeling your back rotate as you move side to side. Just a couple more now. This is a great one for trunk rotation. Our last exercise today is Strike of the Cobra, a wee bit of martial arts. So if you're standing or sitting, keep your back straight and maintain a strong stance and clench your fists at chest height, like you're a boxer. Then with your right hand, punch arm straight out and return. And then punch upwards towards the left-hand corner of the ceiling, so your arm crosses over your body and return. Now do the same with your left hand, so punching straight forward, then punching upwards across the body towards the right, and keep going. Really think about how your muscles are responding here, making the punches slow and controlled. Just a couple more now. Good job. Now we really should all be feeling warm. If you're a little out of breath, that's a good thing. It means you've been working. If you're not a little out of breath, can you work a little harder next time? Anyway, nearly finished. We'll just finish off with a nice stretch and cool down. So we're going to start with a hamstring stretch. So step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean forward gently. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of your leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Then return to a standing up position and swap your legs. So this time, step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Then bend your right leg and just lean forward gently. Again, feeling that nice, long stretch. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you are hugging a tree directly in front of you. And your arms form a nice circle in front of you. And then cup your hands, putting one hand in front of the other. Push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across your shoulders and arms. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Now sit up or stand up and return to that nice relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant. So that was all the exercises, and we hope you enjoyed them. Just to finish off, shake it out. Just shake those arms and hands and then legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have great health benefits. It's fun. You'll simply feel better. So do keep going. Thank you for listening.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is David, and here are some notable events which happened this week in the past. On the 27th of April 1992, Betty Boothroyd was elected to become the first female speaker in the 700-year history of the House of Commons. Born in Dewsbury, West Yorkshire, as the only daughter of mill workers, she grew up in a political environment as her father was a trade unionist. Boothroyd worked as a professional dancer in London's West End from 1946 to 48, and then went into politics, working in the UK for Labour MP Barbara Castle, as well as working in the US on the campaign to elect John F. Kennedy as US president. She eventually became an MP, and after nearly 2 decades in Parliament, Boothroyd was elected to the position of Speaker of the House of Commons, a job which involves presiding over proceedings in the chamber. Stepping down from the position in the year 2000, Baroness Boothroyd continued to be active in politics, campaigning to keep the UK in the EU and calling for a statue in central London to commemorate the part women played in World War II. On the 28th of April 1986, the Soviet Union acknowledged that there had been an accident at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine. The report from the official news agency TASS said that one of the reactors had been damaged in the accident, but gave no further details beyond saying that measures were being taken to eliminate the consequences of the accident. The report was the first confirmation of a major nuclear catastrophe since monitoring stations in Scandinavia began reporting sudden high discharges of radioactivity in the atmosphere 2 days prior. Although initially downplayed by the Soviet Union, Chernobyl remains the world's worst civil nuclear disaster, and thousands of people died as a result of exposure to radiation. Contamination spread across Belarus and into Europe, and up until 2012, sheep on farms in North Wales still had to be tested for radiation before their meat could be eaten. On the 29th of April 1992, fierce rioting broke out in Los Angeles following the decision by a jury to acquit 4 white police officers accused of physically assaulting black motorist Rodney King. The case centred on a video which captured footage of 4 police officers beating, kicking and clubbing Rodney King for 81 seconds while other police officers looked on. Given this video evidence, the decision from the all-white jury to acquit the officers caused a political outcry and provoked fury in the predominantly black neighbourhoods of South Central Los Angeles. The riots lasted several days and resulted in 55 deaths, 2,000 injuries and 12,000 arrests. At a second federal trial a year later, which accused the officers of violating Rodney King's civil rights, 2 were cleared and 2 were found guilty, serving 2 years in prison. On the 30th of April 1997, at exactly 12:11 p.m., London's iconic Big Ben clock stopped ticking, and for 54 minutes, the most famous clock in the world failed to keep time. Completed in 1859, Big Ben has a long history of technical issues. The first bell cast for the tower cracked before it could be installed, and the second bell also developed a crack shortly after installation, resulting in silence from the tower until 1862. The bells stopped ringing again during the First World War, and the tower was not illuminated at night for the duration of the Second World War, when London was kept dark in the blackouts. Despite the heavy damage that the Blitz inflicted on London, Big Ben's clock stayed within a second and a half of Greenwich Mean Time for the duration of the war. Since then, both the extreme heat and the build-up of snow have caused disruption to Big Ben's operation. In 1962, snow delayed the ringing of the bells, causing the capital to ring in the new year 10 minutes later than the rest of the country. Big Ben's clock stopped again in 2005 on one of the hottest May days ever recorded in London. On the 1st of May 1931, New York's famous Empire State Building opened. It was the result of a competition between Walter Chrysler of the Chrysler Corporation and John Jacob Raskob of General Motors to see who could erect the taller building. Despite the colossal size of the project, the design, planning and construction of the Empire State Building took just 410 days from start to finish. By using as many as 3,400 workers each day, the building's skeleton was constructed at a record pace of 4.5 stories per week. Finished well ahead of schedule and under budget at $40 million, upon completion, the Empire State Building was the world's tallest skyscraper at 1,454 feet with 102 stories. This, together with its Art Deco architecture, has made it a popular attraction, with around 4 million tourists visiting annually. The building is also a cultural icon, which has featured in more than 250 television series and films since King Kong was released in 1933. With over 2.8 million rentable square feet inside, the building even has its very own zip code. On the 2nd of May 1982, during the Falklands War, the Argentine cruiser, the General Belgrano, was sunk by a British nuclear submarine in the South Atlantic. The sinking of the Belgrano saw the loss of 368 lives, and the Argentinians retaliated by sinking HMS Sheffield, killing 20. The Falklands sea battle continued for many more weeks and then turned to the land, with Argentine forces eventually surrendering and peace being declared on the 20th of June. The Belgrano sinking remains extremely controversial, with some claiming that it was done primarily for political rather than tactical gain. Many people believe that it was an unnecessary use of force, as the ship was outside the exclusion zone and was apparently sailing away from the Falklands. On the 3rd of May 1968, Britain's first heart transplant was successfully carried out by a team of 18 doctors and nurses at the National Heart Hospital in Marylebone, London. The 7-hour operation, which was led by South African-born surgeon Donald Ross, was undertaken on an unnamed 45-year-old man. The donor heart came from a 26-year-old man called Patrick Ryan. The heart recipient, later named as Frederick West, died 46 days after receiving the donor heart from an overwhelming infection which he had been fighting for 9 days. Following this, British surgeons adopted a cautious approach to heart surgery, and only 6 more transplants were carried out in the UK over the next decade. In the 1980s, transplants became more common. And last year, 237 heart transplant operations were carried out in the UK. And that was news from notable events that happened this week in the past.
Hello, I'm Sue, and here are some famous people's birthdays that took place this week in the past. On the 27th of April, 1959, Sheena Easton was born. She's a Scottish singer and became one of the most successful British female recording artists of the 1980s. On the 28th of April in 1974, Vernon Kay was born. He is an English broadcaster and former model. Kay presented Channel 4's T4 and various television shows for ITV, including All-Star Family Fortunes, Splash and A Thousand Heartbeats. On the 29th of April 1949, Anita Dobson was born. She is an English stage, film and television actress and singer. Dobson is best known for her role from 1985 to 1988 as Angie Watts in the BBC soap opera EastEnders. She is married to Queen guitarist and astrophysicist Sir Brian May. On the 30th of April, 1947, Leslie Grantham was born. He is an English actor, best known for his role as Dirty Den Watts in the BBC soap opera EastEnders. On the 1st of May, 1946, Joanna Lumley was born. She is an English actress, presenter, former model, author, television producer, and activist. She won two BAFTA TV awards for her role as Patsy Stone in the BBC sitcom Absolutely Fabulous. On the 2nd of May, in 1962, Jimmy White was born. He is an English professional snooker player. He was nicknamed the Whirlwind because of his fluid attacking style of play. On the 3rd of May, 1933, James Brown was born. He was an American singer, dancer, musician, record producer, and band leader. A major figure of 20th century music, he is often referred to by the honorific nicknames Godfather of Soul, Mr. Dynamite, and Soul Brother Number One.
Thank you, Sue. And now, as promised, is a musical interlude with Midnight in Moscow by Kenny Ball and his Jazzmen.
Thank you. Hello, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. This month's recording is of the birds on the Wash, a large estuary on the east coast of the UK. It was made by Ian Brady at one of our winter meetings. The Wash supports over 400,000 non-breeding water birds during the winter months, and the area is teeming with migratory bird life, including knot, dunlin, redshank, oystercatcher, curlew and brent geese. On a spring tide, and these actually happen every month and relate to the position of the moon rather than the season, tens of thousands of birds are pushed off the mudflats by the advancing tide. Interestingly, the term spring tide comes from the Middle English or Norse, meaning springing forth. During the recording, a large flock of pink-footed geese flew across the microphones.
Hello, my name is Leslie, and I'm going to read an article from Hertfordshire Life about the famous Buffalo Bill and how 115 years ago he brought his epic Wild West spectacular to Hitchin, possibly the greatest event the town has ever seen. What an incongruous sight it must have been. Hundreds of cowboys and American Indians, together with 500 horses and exotic rough riders, all led by Buffalo Bill, descending on Edwardian Hertfordshire. Travelling in three special trains, Buffalo Bill's Wild West show brought its breathtaking performances to Hitchin in June 1904 as part of a British tour. Teaming down from the station to set up camp on Butts Close, an ancient green space in the heart of the market town. Buffalo Bill was born William Frederick Cody in Iowa in 1846 and came to be celebrated as the youngest Indian fighter on the Great Plains when in 1857 he killed one of the Native Americans who attacked the cattle drive he was working on. After the American Civil War, during which he served as a scout for the Union Army, he would later join the US Army as a scout in the Indian Wars, and a stint as the Pony Express rider, Cody hunted buffalo to feed construction crews on the Union Pacific Railroad. He is said to have slaughtered some 4,280 buffalo, earning him the title of Champion Buffalo Killer of the Great Plains. The name gave him the inspiration for his showman persona when, as a budding impresario, he created a Wild West theatrical extravaganza in 1883. It was 11 years earlier that Cody had gained prominence thanks to a novel written by Edward Zane Carroll Judson under the pen name Ned Buntline. Judson had made Cody the hero of his highly sensationalised dime novel, The Scouts of the Plains, and convinced Cody to travel to Chicago to star in a stage version of the book. While Cody and Judson parted ways after a year, the former hunter enjoyed the life of a performer and stayed on the stage for 11 seasons before creating his own touring spectacle. He was not the first to come up with the concept, with the original Wild West shows having begun in the 1840s, but he was determined to make his fortune from his experience in the Wild West. With a cast of hundreds, his melodrama featured galloping horses, fancy shooting, battle reenactments, and, above all, American Indians representing indigenous tribes. Cody even attracted leader of the Sioux, Sitting Bull, to join the troupe in 1885. The victor of the battle against Custer's forces at Little Bighorn just 9 years earlier performed in the show for 4 months after Cody agreed to pay him $50 a week, 20 times the amount Indians who served as policemen on reservations earned. Paul Fees, former curator of the Buffalo Bill Museum in Cody, Wyoming, says, "The role of Indian people was both essential and anomalous in the Wild West. At least in the big shows, they generally were treated and paid the same as the other performers. They were able to travel with their families, and they earned a living not possible to them on their reservations. They were encouraged by Buffalo Bill and others to retain their language and rituals. They gained access to political and economic leaders, and their causes were sometimes argued in the published show programmes. Yet they were stereotyped as mounted, war-bonneted warriors, the last impediment to civilization. Thus, they had to refight a losing war nightly, and their hollow victory in the Little Bighorn enactments demonstrated over and over to their audiences the justification for American conquest." American sharpshooter Annie Oakley, immortalised in the musical Annie Get Your Gun, joined the show in 1885, where she was often referred to as Little Sure Shot. She was one of the show's star attractions for 16 years. Annie was renowned for her trick shots. From 30 paces, she was able to split the edge of a playing card, shatter glass balls thrown in the air, hit dimes held between fingers, and shoot an apple out of a dog's mouth. In her most famous trick, she used a mirror to hit a target behind her, shooting backwards. These feats astonished and thrilled and generated huge audiences. There was plenty else to pull in spectators. Hard-riding cowboys and yelling Indians, trick riders, ropers and shooters, the capture of a stagecoach, Indian war dances and wild animals such as buffalo, elk, bear, moose and deer. Acts included bison hunt, train robbery and Indian war battle reenactment. The grand finale was usually a scene where Indians attacked a settler's cabin and were repelled by Buffalo Bill, cowboys and Mexicans. The show first visited England in 1887, watched by Queen Victoria as part of her Golden Jubilee celebrations, and was staged throughout Europe. It returned to Europe 7 more times, and by the end of the 19th century, Buffalo Bill was one of the most famous people in the world. In 1904, the Wild West show, earlier styled Buffalo Bill's Wild West and Congress of Rough Riders of the World, included a gruelling 6-month schedule across England, Wales and Scotland, with a show in a different town almost every day. Tony Riley, coordinator of community group The Friends of Butts Close, says, "Their logistics were impressive. The Wild West show had a cast of hundreds and some 500 horses. The entourage travelled in 3 special trains. The show finished in St Albans on June the 22nd and journeyed from there to Hitchin via Hatfield, as there was at that time a direct rail line from St Albans running west via Smallford to Hatfield." Strangely, there is little historic reference to the show's appearance in St Albans, even of where it took place in the city. But the troops subsequently arrived in Hitchin on the morning of June the 23rd and set up camp. Tony says advertisements were placed around the town and the show was well anticipated. On the morning of June the 23rd, the residents of Bedford Road would have looked out across Butts Close to see an array of teepees and all of the paraphernalia of the event being set up. By 1904, the spectacle had become much more than simply cowboys and Indians, with Cody expanding it to include riders and performers from across the continents, including Cossacks, trick cyclists and Japanese warriors. Tony says, "It's probably the greatest event that has ever been staged here." The local press reported that some 24,000 people attended the event on Butts Close and that the highlight was still Buffalo Bill's marksmanship, shooting down balls thrown in the air while riding his horse. The entourage decamped and took their three trains to Cambridge to repeat the shows there the following day. After 800 performers, 24,000 spectators and especially 500 horses, cleaning Butts Close of the litter and everything else would have been an unenviable task. From its inception more than 20 years earlier, Buffalo Bill's Wild West show had evolved into an international institution and made him one of the world's first global celebrities. Newspaper reporters and dime novelists had transformed the hard-riding, fast-shooting Cody into a Western folk hero. He continued to perform in his show until 1916, although at the age of 71, he often had to be helped onto his horse backstage. While his exhibition remained very popular in America and abroad, in the end, largely through poor investments, including Cody's purchase of an unproductive gold mine, he lost the fortune he had made in show business. His last public appearance occurred just 2 months before his death in Denver, Colorado, in 1917, a great showman to the last.
Hello, my name's Sue, and this is an article from the Hertfordshire Life magazine called Cold Christmas and Other Church Legends. Hertfordshire's churches are storehouses of history, yet they also attract legends. Mia Jankowitz follows the mysterious trail. Alongside their central role in worship, churches are deep repositories of folk myths and obscure histories. And for their communities, these can be a blessing or a curse. If the stories are to be believed, a deconsecrated church near Cold Christmas Lane in Thundridge is one of the most haunted places in Britain. Search for the place online and lurid tales of perished children are repeated across websites. The story goes like this. Somewhere near Cold Christmas Lane is the site of a mass burial of children who froze to death in winter, hence the name of the lane. Nearby is the ruined church of St Mary and All Hallows, said to echo with the moans of the children. Over the years, the story has attracted a steady trail of occult thrill-seekers to the East Hertfordshire village and the evocative tower of its old church, all that remains after it was dismantled in the early Victorian period. The problem? The story of the frozen children is almost certainly not true. According to research by parish councillor Clive Brigden, the historical record shows absolutely nothing to confirm the tale of frozen children. And for parishioners, for every rowdy party of ghost hunters that comes by, there's fresh litter and graffiti to clear up. Worst of all, says Clive, is at Halloween, when police have to extend their patrols to deal with ghost hunters. It turns out that the only disturbances at Cold Christmas Lane are of the living, and this has galvanised the community. Over the past decade, activists have led a project to reshape the old church site. With help from local authorities and volunteers clearing the site, the spooky, nettle-strewn ruin is turning into a beauty spot loved by walkers, and reports of trouble are becoming less frequent. It's a very pleasant little area and a great place for a picnic, says Clive. I would spend many, many hours working around the church in the evenings. All this stuff that there's mists and ghosts and stuff, it's just rubbish. Not all church myths are such a burden, however. To Reverend James Sawyer, the legend of Brent Pelham's 11th century knight Piers Shonks is a story he thinks can bring the community together and attract tourism. Shonks's tomb is lodged in a wall of St Mary's Church, and the inscription above it tells how Shonker, one serpent kills, t'other defies, and in this wall, as in a fortress, lies. According to lore, the one serpent was a dragon that hailed from the nearby village of Barkway and terrorised the people of Brent Pelham. Nominated to handle the problem, the Lord of the Manor of Pelham, and, as the story goes, anything up to 23 feet tall, set out with his hunting dogs to slay the beast at its lair under a yew tree. The battle was long and bloody, but finally the serpent lay at the knight's feet. However, in so doing, he angered a second serpent, the devil himself, who vowed, in payment for the death of his creature, that he'd come for Shonks's soul, whether he was buried inside or outside the church. Shonks was as smart as he was brave. On his deathbed, he drew his bow and shot, pronouncing that he would be buried where the arrow landed. The arrow went through the south window of St Mary's and struck the north wall. Buried neither inside nor outside the church, but in an alcove, his soul forever escapes Satan's clutches. The coffin's elaborately carved black marble slab depicts a dragon breathing fire at Shonks, but the flames are deflected by a cross. He is being raised to heaven by an angel. It's a lovely story because for me it opens up a mystery, James explains, to think about people who've been part of our community for the past 1,000 years. The Reverend has only recently been appointed to the benefice, and with the job comes the thorny problem of how to meet exorbitant running costs in the parish. He's determined to keep all 5 churches in his care open outside of services. It's important to me that the churches should be open for people to go in and have a quiet time and think about history and get a sense of what it's all about. He described the beauty of his patch in Hertfordshire, tucked away from major routes and untrodden by the tourist trail. With the popularity of the epic dragon-filled TV series Game of Thrones, Hertfordshire's St George has definite appeal. Shonks may yet be called upon again to come to the aid of a Hertfordshire village.
We're nearing the end of this week's programme. It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Caroline, Liz, Penny and Fiona, for reading the news, and the Hearts Advertiser for providing it. Thanks to John and Wendy for the radio listings, and our friends at Wharfdale Talking News for the audio-described TV listings. TNF Soundings for 10 Today and Ian Brady of the Wildlife Sound Recording Society for his evocative recordings. David read the events in history, and Sue presented famous birthdays. The Heart's Life Stories were read by Leslie and Sue. Steve will be here next week with News Extra, but that's all from me in April 2025. We close with Petite Fleur, the top 20 hit by Chris Barber, the third great British trad jazz bandleader of the 50s and 60s, alongside Acca Bilk and Kenny Ball. I hope you enjoy it, and remember to let us know about music you'd like to hear on the programmes. Goodbye for now, and keep well. Thank you.